So we were discussing, as you all can remember, about Uraga Sutta, which is available in the Suttanipata, and it contains around 16-17 verses. And this is the very first sermon in the Suttanipata, and it is based on a particular feature which all the serpents are usually doing, engaged with. So that is shedding off of one's worn out skin. So probably you have seen that sometimes certain serpents, so they shed off their worn out skin here and there. So that is a little common feature in the forest. Sometimes maybe snakes, sometimes maybe rat snakes, so different types of snakes, serpents. So they time to time sheds off the worn out skin. So Buddha used this as a kind of a instruction, as a simile, to instruct us so how we need to let go of various defilements, or let go of various levels of attachments in our spiritual life. So spiritual life also has some amount of letting go process, and more you understand things as they truly are, so this letting go process become more and more smooth, and it is doable. But at the beginning it appears difficult because we have a lot of attachment towards many things, and we are interested of things, and we don't know the reality of things. As a result of that, we attach to so many things. But on the other hand, particularly the Vipassana practice help us to understand the reality, the way things are. So that helps to properly prepare the mindset to detach, to have a kind of a dispassionate attitude towards various things. So then the letting go process, the shedding off process, become quite smooth. It's not something forceful, it is not something willful, rather it becomes kind of natural. So sometimes Buddha explain, okay, so you have a desire or anger, then you need to let go of that. You have an attachment, you have kind of a I view, self view, you need to let go of that. So likewise Buddha advice. Now here we come across various ways how Buddha advised to many different people, and here this particular verse number 15th, where Buddha mentioned about how certain defilements are causing kind of a distress in the mind. So the verse going like this: Yassa dharatajya na santi kechi orang agamanaya pachyasi. So bhikkhu jahati oraparam urago jinnamiva tacham puranam. So bhikkhu jahati oraparam urago jinnamiva tacham puranam. So this statement is a common one. So it is quite common to each and every verse. But others are the ones changing from verse to verse and giving us various perspectives of the Dhamma, the practice. Yassa dharataja na santi kechi. That means dharata. Dharata means kind of a distress, kind of heaviness, feeling burdened, feeling unhappy, or feeling stressed, tensed. Yassa dharataja na santi kechi. So there is no such distress. And again, orang agamanaya pachyasi. Orang means that you are coming to the same shore again, returning to the near shore again. So if there is no distress which is causing someone to return back to the same shore, so that particular person, that arahant, is capable of leaving this shore as well as the other shore. Like a person who, like a serpent who, or it, leaving aside, shedding off the worn out skin. So how defilements are causing distress? So this is something interesting that we can check in. States born from distress. Now, when a defilement arises in the mind, so it slowly agitates the mind. Now, if you look at your mind, how your mind slowly get on to some kind of lustful thought, say for example. at the beginning, suppose you had a kind of a peaceful mind, where there is no distress, there is no stress, there is no any kind of a burden, but kind of a luminous mind, unattached mind, relaxed mind, released mind. Suppose you were trying to maintain this for a while, then all of a sudden, kind of a image appear in the mind, which is more kind of triggering the mind. It promoted a little bit of lust. It promoted a little bit of, say, delight in the mind. Now, probably, you want to experience that. You want to promote that because there is a delight attached to it. As a result of that, you are promoting that. Say, for example, then another thought appears. Then more and more, certain previous experience related thought may appear. Previous experience related images may appear. Future experience related kind of expectations may appear. Now slowly, so your mind start crowding, and now you use as a balance. Previously your mind was quite peaceful, serene, calm, quiet, clear. So those were the qualities. But now slowly mind get tensed, distressed, maybe clogged, colored, hold on to something, grasping, and you lose the balance. So even though lust producing some kind of a delight, so that delight is actually based on such kind of a distress. So internally you have a little burning, and it can grow to a higher burning. So sometimes that is why Buddha mentioned natthi raga samo aggi. So lust is kind of a great fire available in the mind. So torturing the mind, burning the mind. A similar thing happened even in the anger. See, at the beginning, probably you may sort of experience a little thought. You remembered a particular person who is not happy about you, or who is not respecting you, or probably who has harmed you. So that particular image appear in the mind. At that time, actually, there was no burning yet. But now, this particular image, mental image, now you are attributing a particular person. Now you are attaching putting a label, so and so. So this is what, this is the person. And now you are adding more and more thoughts to that. And now there's a person. We have attributed a person. We have personified. And now slowly anger is growing. You may think about various past incidents. You may project towards the future happenings. And currently things are going on. So now slowly you are weaving various different kinds of thoughts. Ultimately, now you are burning through anger. So you strongly hold and you are thinking, okay, you are correct, he is wrong, he should be punished, I should take revenge. So likewise, I am adding more and more thoughts. So ultimately, you start burning with anger. Suppose you are walking. Suppose you are doing your typical walking practice as you are doing right now. So at that time, suppose you have seen a kind of a flower. Previously, your mind is unattached. You are able to maintain an unattached mind, a quite peaceful mind, relaxed mind, simplified mind. Now suppose at the very moment that you are being attracted towards that flower, now you start searching for that. Now you want to go there. You want to experience that. You want to have the smell. You want to know the smell. You want to pluck that flower. Now a little bit of agitation is coming in the side, in the mind. So all these different kinds of little sensations, little thoughts, little mental images, even though we are not, if we are not handling them properly, mindfully, wisely, then they may have the possibility to grow to a higher state, more confused state, constructed state, And it may completely overwhelm us. Then more thinking going on, more obsessive thinking going on, conceptual proliferation going on. Now we are simply a victim. We are like a slave. We are simply obeying those different kinds of obsessive thoughts. Slavery. So slavery is where, so we are completely unhappy, completely distressed, completely overwhelmed by suffering. Now, well, unfortunately, lust, anger, jealousy, envy, greed, so all these different defilements, if we are not properly understanding them, if we don't understand their burning nature, distressed nature, then we may be promoting them, we are aggravating them, we may fertilize them, and again taking them. Then what happens is, our mind start working on the same line, the same direction. It's very much like aligning your mind towards a particular direction. Suppose you are thinking about a particular person. At the beginning, he or she is a normal person, a typical another person. But if you think about her, think about him more and more, now that person become a significant person, an important person. And now probably you want to think more and more that further aggravate the situation. Now many, many thoughts related to that person is again and again appearing in your mind. So mind get fully occupied with that person. You all might have gone through various love affairs. Probably you can remember how your attached person has become kind of the continuous memory, continuous occupant in your mind. Now you can't avoid thinking about him, avoid thinking about her. Again and again, that image is coming to the mind. Now say you are quite loving your children. So you have a son, you have a daughter. So you are so attached to that person. So various thoughts related to that your son, related to your daughter, may be coming to your mind. Probably you are as a father, as a mother. Suppose you are going in the train, you are driving, or you are working. At that time also, those thoughts are appearing, mental images are appearing. Immediately we attribute to that our son, to our daughter, how it is growing. And now you are worried whether he has gone to the school, whether he has returned back from the school, whether he has done his homework, whether he is safe at home, has he returned from school, whether he met with the trouble. So likewise, various thoughts are appearing. Ultimately, actually, you internally have some distress. Internally, there's a kind of an unsatisfied state in your mind. So you are worried. Now you start giving a call, you want to contact him. So likewise, many things are now you are planning to overcome that distress. Now, whenever there is attachment, so that is why we need to understand, okay, attachment leads to suffering. Attachment or the grasping leads to suffering. But typically, we don't consider, rather we want to possess, we want to attach, we want to hold. I want him to be mine. I want her to be mine. I want they to be with me. I want to possess. So that is the typical attitude we have. But unfortunately, when we have that, so a lot of other things are there. The same other people are also attached to the same person, same thing. So there's a kind of a competition then. Maybe you want to protect. Now assume if it is a wealth, say you want to avoid that others are sort of stealing it. So you want to protect. Now you want to protect using various mechanisms, security systems, using weapons. Ultimately, you may get into various arguments, disputes, quarrels. So defilements are taking slowly to various directions. Maybe it started like a very slight thought, kind of a little image. But that image, when it is growing and taken to a very higher level, fully occupied the mind, then we are kind of slaves of that obsessive thinking, proliferation, and we are like slaves. So that is where we need to be careful not to take it to the level of proliferation, not allowing this thought, mental image, defilement, come to its more overwhelming level. So is it possible for us to recognize this distress at its early stage without allowing it to overwhelm us? So if we can do that, then we can say, okay, we are not again and again pulling towards this show, the present show. Rather, we are trying something different. But on the other hand, again and again, we are being bounded to the present, or rather to the, say, present phenomena. That means your existing type of situation. You are blocked there. You're being dragged there. You're being hindered there, bound there. So then you are very much returning to the same show. You can't escape in a way. You can't go to the other show. Rather, again and again, you are bound to this show. That's why Oramathirang. Oramathirang means this show, the present show. That is a synonym for what you call the designation as identity. So we have a kind of a person. I am an individual. So Oramathirang Sasankang Sappati Bhayantiko Bhikkave Sakkaya Setang Adivachana. So this show, the near show, is a synonym with the use as a designation of identity. There is a person here, there is I am living, I am existing, I am so and so, my name is this, my name is that. So we have an identity. So we are promoting that identity. As an individual, I want to present myself, show off myself, designate myself. So you are always circulating in that same identity. So you have prepared yourself, you have prepared a person, you have prepared a status designation. So again and again, you are trying to fulfill that person. You are trying to prove that person. You are trying to assure that person. So then the Paramathirang means the other show is to understand there is no real person here, but it is a illusionary personification. Because of avijja, because of ignorance, we have prepared a person. We have constructed this person. Then we may, then we can say we are not in this show. Probably we are trying our hard to cross to the other show. Arahant, on the other hand, is a person who has completely crossed. Now he doesn't want even the other show. He is completely freed. He has done the job. He has completed the task. That bhikkhu gives up the here and the beyond, this show and the other show, both, as a serpent sheds its old worn out skin. Now, whenever we have so many things to look after, whenever we have so many things to possess, take care of, so that always generates inner burning, inner little agitation, inner responsibilities. So even though you are going to another country, so you are always thinking about them, always thinking about your property, so always thinking about your wealth. So does this mean that you need to leave aside everything and you want to ultimately become a monk? Is it the solution? So that is also one solution, by the way. But after being a monk, probably you can hold some more things. You may have a reputation, you may have teachers, you may have other sub-brahmacharis, the other companions, you may have your temple, you may have your devotees, and you may have a sort of attachments there also. So you wanted to leave aside the lay life, now you become a monk, and now you attach to another different things. So then the purpose is lost. So it is not the main solution is not that you become a monk and attach to other things instead of lay life attachments. If you have monk's life attachments, so then still attachments. But the solution lies either you as a lay person, householder, or as a monk, how to maintain a freed mind, how to maintain unattached mind, how to maintain a mind which is not interested of holding things. Because the mind has understood attaching, possessing, holding, grasping, promotes suffering, leads towards suffering, unsatisfaction, burden, heaviness, and it promotes various defilements. So that defilements have basically distress. So if there is no such defilements are available, if those defilements are abandoned, so then he is capable of giving up here and beyond. So the task is done. He has fulfilled the noble path. So therefore we can, understanding this burning nature requires some time. Because sometimes unknowingly, ignorantly, we attach to things. We are going through various, lustful thoughts. Going through various angry thoughts. We are continuing to think. Even though the incident has happened several days ago, several weeks ago, several months ago, still we are worrying, still we are agitated, still we are burning with anger, maybe. The very moment it comes to the mind, you start burning. So there are such people, somebody has done something wrong, maybe a mistake or taking a revenge or whatever thing. So it has done maybe several years ago. But this person, the very moment he remembers that, again he start burning. So you can see the burning, distressful nature of the defilements. So if you are able to understand that burning nature, probably why are we burning then? So knowing the defilements, knowing their presence, knowing their torturing nature, burning nature, help us to understand that and let go of that. Like this serpent shedding off its worn out skin. So first of all, we need to understand the burning nature in a way, that sense. So sometimes we don't understand that. That's why we are promoting it. That's why we are trying to have delight from it. Through lust, that's why we are promoting lust, because we are not considering that burning nature. But if we understand the burning nature internally happening to the mind, say previously your mind is quite peaceful, serene, tranquil, but all of a sudden now because of lust, say for example, now it start burning, feeling heavy, feeling crowded, clogged. So if we know this disadvantage, suffering, distress, tension, which happens when the mind is under the influence of lust, under the influence of anger, under the influence of jealousy, under the influence of any other defilement, then probably we better minimize that distress, avoid that distress, try to maintain this calmness, tranquility, purity of the mind. So more we are associating that kind of a pure state of mind, so then the mind indicates us even a slightest burning. Previously, maybe it is growing to higher state and you were burning, but now even a single little burning may appear sometimes unbearable. Then you are quickly trying to come back to the calmness, again come back to the emptiness, come back to the unattached state of mind. Because your mind is more refined, more sensitive. It wants to stay more pure rather than clogged. Rather than crowded, rather than attached, rather than defiled, it prefer to be undefiled, prefer to stay unburdened, prefer to stay unattached. So it's a, in a way kind of a training process. So you can't, none of us can't do it immediately, but understanding the burning nature, understanding their hindering nature, understanding their crushing nature, assume that we have some inner good qualities. So when those defilements are arising, so they are very much like crushing the other good inner qualities. They're hindering the mind. crushing the mind, clogging the mind, stressing the mind. So more we understand that nature, then we better protect the mind, guard the mind. So that's why sometimes with respect to Indriya Sangvara, Buddha mentioned that when one is trying to maintain a proper Indriya Sangvara, restrainment of the faculties, Buddha mentioned, okay, he is keeping the mind without any defilements as much as possible. So he's experiencing unblemished mind. So his mind is for a long time not influenced by defilements. So these are the things that we can learn from this verse. So how a kind of a distress is rising in the mind because of these burning defilements. And if one is minimizing that, if there is no such conditioning is available, so that means he has done the job. He has done the task. Now there are no defilements. As a result of that, there is no distress. Now his mind is peaceful. So then he is like a serpent who has shed off the worn out skin. So he is not attaching to this show nor to the other show. So with that, I like to conclude today's Dhamma sermon. Now I would like to open the session for questions.
Asanai Bhante, we have 5 questions today.
Yeah.
First question, it's on mindful sitting. Dear Venerable Bhante, my main meditation object is silence. And time to time, I focus on breath when I'm overwhelmed with thoughts. Bhante, recently during the practice, I noticed 2 kinds of mental habits come in. One habit is the perfectionist. And while meditating, my mind wanders off on how to get even grass in the garden. I know these are temporary things and I should not be worried. Yet mind gives suggestions and ways of doing things. Sometimes the pull is so strong, I feel like going out to garden and work. This is the first time. Second is, at night, I get memories of those who have passed away and I feel sad, and most times I cry. This is the other end that pulls me. Again, I know these are all mental stuff. I know I'm going to die one day, just like everyone else. I know I need to be firm on being aware, which I think I am. Yet the habitual mind clings and makes an identity out of the mental signs. I want to be unshakable of these situations, Bhante, to proceed further in meditation. Your advice is much appreciated. It metta, that's the end of the question.
Yeah, I mean, it's a kind of a common problem. Time to time, sometimes certain thoughts overwhelm us. Maybe minor things we can overcome. We can sort of quickly allow them to fade away. But sometimes certain thoughts are popping up again and again in the during the meditation session. Sometimes, as you have mentioned, say during the walking session, say you get some brilliant ideas how to implement something, you have some problems, you have to sort out certain, say, your designs, you have to sort out certain family problems, you have certain commitments. So while all these things are available, suppose you are going to the walking path. At the beginning, you didn't have a proper solution, but when your mind settles, okay, quickly, a brilliant idea comes to the mind. Then what are you going to do? Are you going to quickly implement that before it forget? So that is also not a bad thing in a way. But actually, one option is, so if you feel that you are, say, assume that you are so badly expecting a proper solution, but all of a sudden you get a brilliant idea, it's worthy. Before it forgets, probably you can quickly write it in few words, forget it then. Because, I mean, otherwise, again and again, mind may tell you, okay, you might even forget that. I mean, better you do it. You better do it. So likewise, our mind is so cheaty, so tricky in a way. So as a sort of safe method, probably you put a short note. Okay, this is the way to do it. Then you completely forget it. This is not the time to implement it. So you have to, like you are taming a child, like you are properly behaving a child. So you have to behave the mind. It may be a proper idea. It may be a good idea, brilliant idea. So that is why you wrote it down. But now it is not the time to implement it. Maybe once you go to the college, once you go to your department, to your company, probably you can implement that. But now is not the time for that. So you need to sort of tame the mind. Okay, now you have to tell the mind, okay, now I have written that, don't worry about it. Now you better put your attention back to the steps, back to the breath. So likewise, this is kind of a training like a child. So our mind is like a child in a way. And again, of course, as you have mentioned, so these brilliant ideas, these good ideas also has a potential to come during the meditation session, because that is the time mind get proper balance. Clarity of mind happens during the meditation. So a solution may happen. Probably you can take an advantage of that and maybe write it down, but this is not the time to implement it. Now this is the time to practice. Another option is maybe you can tell your mind, okay, you get a 1 billion idea, good. But just continue as the way you are doing now. Maybe at the end of the session, probably you get even a better idea. Why not? So you also have to do in another way, tricky way. So currently this is the brilliant idea, fine. But if I practice diligently, properly, forgetting about this idea, probably during the end of the session, probably you get even a better idea, a better solution. So that is also a possible thing. So likewise, we have to restrain the mind. It's not that always we have to encourage thinking, because through thinking we hardly get a proper solution. But the quiet mind, calm mind, tranquil mind is the one showing us a proper solution. And on the other hand, you are getting to tears, crying. So that means the emotions have overwhelmed you. So that is not something advisable. Rather, you need to recognize these thoughts, these feelings at their early stages. Rather than promoting them, thinking more and more about them, you better abandon them. So that is why you need to pay attention to the breath, pay attention to the foot, pay attention to various sensations. Because then you are diverting your, say, mental proliferation. If you allow mind to go on thinking, then you are supporting thinking. So thinking is not the path, rather giving up thinking, calming down mental proliferation is the path. So we need to properly know this. So actually thinking is the one really messing up the thing. Yeah.
Question number 2 of 5 is again a mindful sitting. Dear Bhante, my sitting practice is mindfulness on breathing. I'm grateful for your guidance and kindness during the last 2 years, where I could build a gradual practice like many others in this forum. I try to do walking and sitting as much as possible in between the daily routines. Sometimes when I could not practice for weeks, I observe how restless my mind becomes and how calming and soothing after I had a 1 hour walk and 1 hour sitting. When my mind is restless and when I sit to practice, I really like the way the breath settles the jitter. When the breath settles in and I could be mindful on every breath, I enjoy the settling part. And when the difference of in-breath and out-breath vanishes and the observation becomes a flux or jelly moving in and out of the nostrils, which fades away eventually. During this time, all body aches are gone and I am in an elated, comfortable posture, no matter how the initial body position was. Sometimes the breath settles in so quickly and I don't get this chance of enjoying the breath and feels a bit frustrated. These mental states are clearly visible thanks to the mindfulness, which I was never aware of before the practice. When I reflect upon these states after the session, I feel like I'm getting attached or attracted to this calming and soothing effect of mindful breath. Thought of writing to Bhante if there is any advice. Much merit for your valuable service. That's the end of the question.
Yeah. I mean, this is quite natural, because we understand the tormenting nature of these different defilements, different stressful situations. So we are having a kind of a calmness, tranquility during the meditation session. Good. So that is a kind of an encouragement factor. But we need to, as you also indicated, so we need to go beyond that. So basically, so having this calm state, says blissful state, is only a temporary solution. So why mind get agitated? Why mind get defiled? Why mind get stressed? So that is due to various reasons. So through vipassana, we need to recognize these different reasons. So that is why, rather than simply adhering to these blissful states, we need to start investigation. Now, assume that you are prepared, your mind already developed fair amount of concentration. You can maintain your attention onto particular phenomena for a long time. So then start investigating them. Now, don't assume that you are practicing Anapanasati for a while. And if your mind get sort of blissful, rather than enjoying that bliss, you got to understand, okay, this is type of feeling. This is not something I need to really attach to, but you step back and you look at it objectively. Well, this is not that I am sort of encouraging or I am being overwhelmed by, but this is another type of feeling. This is what is called the pleasurable feeling, sukha-vedana. After a while, probably it may change. And you may understand, okay, these pleasurable feelings are changing. Probably now what is available is a painful feeling. And you understand, okay, this is a painful feeling. So you are seeing things as they are. They are not belong to you. And they come and go, they change. They are quite vulnerable. And as you properly mentioned, so another day, you are not getting it. So it is beyond your control. So they have their own conditions. So if the proper conditions are available, then a blissful state happen, pleasurable state happen. But on the other hand, the painful state happen, kind of equanimous state happen. So they are dependent. So if you are able to understand that nature, the conditioned nature, unsatisfactory nature, non-governable nature, then you are adding wisdom factor to your practice. So that is important. So rather than attached to the blissful state, now you can have another perspective to your practice. So why this is happening? Even though I like it, why I can't get it? What are the factors depending? So on which factor the pleasure depends on? On which factor the pain depend on? On which factor the equanimity depends on? So likewise, you are now doing a more refined kind of investigation, yoniso manasikara. So that promotes wisdom. So wisdom is the one helping you to have a proper understanding. So when it is growing, actually you can recognize different types of feelings and how they are quickly arising and passing away. Now you are more into the vipassana practice, which is promoting more and more wisdom. So likewise, we have to add this wisdom part to the meditation. So that will give us a lasting solution. Okay.
Question number 3 of 7. This is mindful sitting. Dear Bhante, what are the differences and similarities of Arupa Jhana and the mindful state most of us end up in without an object when the breath fades away? Much merits for your valuable service.
Yeah, actually, let me show you a little diagram. So actually, there is a beautiful sutta called Salayatana Vibhanga Sutta. So in this Salayatana Vibhanga Sutta, Buddha takes us to a very step-by-step process. So this is from Salayatana Vibhanga Sutta, Majjhima Nikaya 137. So there are different kinds of pleasures, household life and vipassana type, and the different kinds of feelings, joyful feeling, grief, painful feelings, equanimous feelings. Similarly, in the vipassana practice also, you have joyful feelings, grief, the kind of domanasa, the little distress, and again the equanimity. So Buddha mentioned slowly, so you need to abandon the household part using the vipassana part through the practice what you are gaining. So ultimately, what is available is only this part. Say for example, At least suppose that now you are practicing, and at that time you forget about all the household life related gratification and different types of feelings. Now you only have this part. Now there Buddha mentioned, okay, now you got to replace grief using the joy. Dhomanasya is replaced using the nekkhammasita somanasya. So you are experiencing some amount of blissful state, you are experiencing some amount of satisfaction, calmness, tranquility. So those are the positive aspects. So you emphasize them more. As a result of that, the little distress that you can't still achieve arahantship, you can't still achieve sotapanna, so many other things are there in your wish list, but none of them still achieved. So those kind of distress now you are keeping aside because you are making use of the joy. And now what you have is joy and equanimity. Later Buddha mentioned, okay, now you got to abandon joy also by means of equanimity. Now you have only the equanimity. Now, once you reach equanimity, now this is not simply the equanimous feeling. Now this is something more deeper, what you reach through vipassana. So you are able to maintain an equanimous mind to various sankhara. Different condition phenomena are there. Now you are maintaining an unattached mind towards these different sankhara. And you can reach this state using many different approaches. Say, if you are practicing kaya anupassana, using sensations, probably you can approach the same state. Say you are practicing vedana anupassana, you can approach the same state. Through chitta anupassana, you can approach the same state. So likewise, many different ways are there to achieve it. So therefore, it is kind of diversified. So many ways are available. Assume one day now you are quite confident of that. Now you are quite confident, okay, now this is the kind of equanimity you are having, this emptiness of the mind you are having. So why not I quickly jump to that? Now you have this radical reflection, decision to jump to that, to dwell there immediately without going through those different paths. Now that is called equanimity based on unity. Upekkha ekatta ekatta sita. Now this is equal to the arupa jhana. Upekkha ekatta ekatta sita, Buddha explains as quite similar to what you call the akasananchayatana, vinyananchayatana, akinchanyayatana, nevasanyana, sanyayatana. Therefore, very much like once you reach here, very much like you are practicing kind of a samatha, but supported by vipassana. It is not pure samatha. Now, this is, you are not a practitioner who came through jhanic practice. Rather, you are a vipassana practitioner who came through vipassana practice. But the mind is enjoying kind of an unattached, completely boundless kind of situation. And here, by the way, it's not the end in a way. So that is the last one available, what you call non-identification, atammayata. So while being here, you need to recognize how eye-making happens, how mind-making happens, how again your mind go and latch with something, attach to something, how you want to become someone. So those are the little things you need to still take care of. So while being here, so you are trying to maintain an unattached mind, unidentified mind, non-grasping mind, without making a self, a person, an individual, any body. So you are maintaining this state. So therefore, in one sense, we can say we are quite similar to arupa, arupa jhana. But on the other hand, it's quite supported with wisdom. And again, we are not identified with any of these jhanas. Now, you are not a jhana practitioner in that sense. Say, if a samatha practitioner, if he is practicing akasananchayatana, arupa jhana, probably he want to dwell there with lot of attachment. He is so attached to that. He recognized that as the end of his practice. And he want to more and more dwell in that state. Because he is so attached to that. He is identifying with that. He has tammayata instead of atammayata with that. But the vipassana practitioner has a different approach. He is using this state to recognize defilements. Because you are, what you are referencing is a pure state of mind, unattached, boundless mind. When a slightest defilement is available, you can quickly recognize that. So you are taking that as an advantage to purify the mind. This is not the end of the practice. Rather, you are using it as a kind of a platform to recognize more and more subtle defilements available in the mind, subtle identifications available in the mind. So then you are getting more and more purified mind. So that is what we need to do. Okay.
Question number 4 of 8. This is a Dhamma Sermon question. Venerable Sir, my question is related to last week's Dhamma Sermon. You have explained very well the different types of latent or sleeping tendencies, anusaya, and the impact on the practitioner by these unknown dangers. In this forum lately, there were many questions and reflections about getting involved with lust, anger, aversion, and many unwholesome states without any power to stop them, even though we can see them coming due to the mindfulness practice. I share the same reflection that multiple times I got carried away by these unwholesome mental proliferations, forgetting our practice and Bhante's wise words. Looks like these are largely due to sleeping tendencies, but I do not know for sure. How would one know if an unwholesome state is arising due to dormant tendency or due to cause of reason or ongoing actions with metta? That's the answer.
Ongoing actions are promoting, in a way, if you are not mindful, they can promote anusaya. They can promote latent tendencies. So if you are not get on to mental proliferation, as we discussed last time, explained in the what you call this Madhupindika Sutta. So if you are not promoting that, if you minimize mental proliferation, then definitely you are not promoting any of these latent tendencies. So that is the path. So therefore you don't need to get confused, different reasons are possible. But right now, if you are trying to maintain your mind free from mental proliferation, that is well and good. And we can't exactly know, when a kind of a defilement happened, whether it is happening exactly because of a previous conditioning or present conditioning, or that we can't exactly know. But if we promote a particular defilement, definitely it may promote further a kind of a whatever the mental tendency, latent tendency available. So irrespective of whatever the reason a defilement happened, so we should not promote that. And it may have some kind of a link towards any of these anusaya. And definitely anusaya has kind of a link to them. And if you are not promoting, definitely then we are calming down them. So give me a minute, one moment. Okay, we can move forward.
Number 5 of 8 is again Dhamma Sermon. Dear Venerable Bhante, in today's Dhamma talk, you mentioned about removing the mental image of someone that has caused you anger or lust. How to remove this mental image with metta? That's the other question.
Many methods are available. So, one method is once you know it as a mental image. So, that is the best method actually. So, if you are not attributing it to a person, rather you recognize internally quickly. So, this is a nama rupa. It is not a person, but it is a nama rupa. Now, like you are in a cinema, and rather than you are attributing whatever the scene appearing on the screen to a real incident, rather you know, okay, this is a scene, this is an image, this is an illusion, this is a light projected onto the screen. So if you have this wisdom, so that is the most powerful kind of method available. So on the other hand, you can say, okay, once you notice this particular image, assume that you have promoted or attributed a person to it, then maybe a little bit of anger has arisen. So maybe now, probably, if you get mindfulness, probably now you recognize this as a anger, this as a defilement. Then as we discussed today, so rather than promoting anger, so you understand, okay, what are the disadvantages, consequences of anger, then anger may fade away. So that is another method. Probably you can replace anger with loving kindness. That is another method. Probably you can turn your attention to something else. Say rather than you confronting anger, probably you can see your body. You can see the steps. You can see the rising and falling of your tummy, maybe in breath and out breath. So you are diverting your attention to something else. So that is another method. Probably as we discussed, even when anger is available, now probably you are using yoniso manasikara and trying to recognize the roots, how it is happened, how you view different thoughts. So you are going to the source. So that is another method. So these methods are explained in the what you call in the Vitakka Santhana Sutta. Five methods are mentioned. And ultimately Buddha mentioned if none of them are working, you better crunch your teeth and you better try to control yourself. Because anger, if you promote, you know, it is harmful to yourself, harmful to another person. So likewise, Buddha mentioned not only to anger, various other defilements, vitakkas, wrong vitakkas. And likewise, we need to control. So, but as we mentioned, the early stage, if you know very well, okay, this is a mental image. So that is a very powerful method where you have very sharp wisdom. Rather than attributing a person to it, so you know, okay, this is a mental image. This is nama rupa, not a reality. Yeah.
Question number 6 of 8, again on Dhammasaman. Dear Bhante, regarding Dhammasaman today, Bhante mentioned about distress in the mind when defilements arise. Do we need to identify this practically by being aware of how we feel at this moment, like the relaxation, calmness we experience in the practice?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it may be natural. Yeah, I think it may be quite natural because automatically such comparison may go on. So that is why when we are familiarized with a very calm, relaxed, tranquil mind, so you know that is the unstressed mind, unattached mind, untensed mind, relaxed mind, free mind, and you feel comfortable with it. You don't have any friction. And the mind recognizes its blissful nature in a way, peaceful nature. Then even a slight distress appear unbearable to such kind of a mind. Because your mind is used to such kind of a very cleansed, fairly serene, pure kind of a state. So at the moment mind get a defilement, so you feel uneasy. So then why are you promoting that uneasiness, promoting that distress? Then that inner question may automatically come, and slowly probably you may abandon that. But the interesting point is, now certain defilements, especially lust, has kind of a delight coming along with it. So still, sometimes we give marks to that. We give values to that. We promote that. But then abandoning that, knowing that it has some, say, distress situation. But still, because of our karma, what you call the fetter of lustful or rather, say, sensual desire available in the mind, we still allow the mind to get defiled. So that is because of ignorance. We still don't have enough wisdom. So the moment we are developing enough wisdom, so we are not allowing different defilements to overwhelm the mind. Yeah.
Question number 7 of 8. We have 2 more questions, Sarinas. Is that okay to continue?
Okay.
okay. Yeah, we can play a recording if you want for that.
Yeah. Okay. That's good. That's good.
So, okay, question number 7 of 8. It's a general question. Dear Venerable Bhante, can you please explain a bit more on what you mean by other show you mentioned in the Dhamma talk? Does this mean paralova, or does this mean when you are here and now, this is show, and when you are not here and now, this is the other show? I thought to ask this and clear for everyone's help. Thank you, Bhante, with metta.
Yeah, I mean, it is not. I mean, this show is regarded as the completely blinded, completely deluded samsara. So that is where we are completely again and again reborn. So that is the this show. The other show is representing the Nibbana in that sense. So we have kind of a target. Okay, we need to cross the samsara. We need to samsara ithara wenawa. We need to cross the samsara. So it's a kind of a crossing over to the other show. So that is the kind of a target we are trying to achieve. So we are working for that. But the interesting point with respect to Arahant is once he achieved that, so there is no such target. Then he has nothing to achieve. So then he abandoned even that target because he has done that. So till that we need to have kind of a proper perspective. Okay, this is the direction I need to move forward. So this is the other show. So still the mind is clogged with various defilements. I have to cleanse the mind. So you are sort of have kind of an objective in the mind. It is necessary. That is the one sort of promoting you towards the practice for the perfection. But when one becomes perfect, like an Arahant, so he's done the task. So that is why he doesn't need another show. He given up this show as well as the other show. That's why there's a beautiful sutta called Kajjaniya Sutta. So there Buddha mentioned, so at the beginning, mind is grasping things. So the practice is abandoning things. So you are continuously, whenever you understand, okay, mind is grasping, okay, you are abandoning, you are letting go, you are letting go, you are letting go. So if the letting go becomes a practice, abandoning becomes a practice, you are now practicing unattached, non-grasping state of mind more and more. Suppose one day you become an Arahant. So then abandoning is done. Letting go has completed now. No more letting go is needed. No more abandoning is needed. Abandonment is needed. So that is where you become completely calm down. And Buddha uses different terms. Katakaraniyo, task is done. Ohita bharo. So you have put aside the burden. Put aside the what you call this heaviness, weight, because task is done, no more to do. So then this show and the other show both are not necessary. So therefore it is not simply this show is not simply that unmindful state, and the other show is not the mindful state, rather it has more kind of a deeper meaning.
Question number 8 of 8, this is the last question. It's again related to the Dhamma sermon. Thank you, Bhante, for the insightful talk today. If one becomes aware of an arisen angry mind caused as a result of another person's action, I know the anger is in my mind and my problem to solve and not blame the outside contact or person. How can one calm the mind or lessen the emotion without dismissing the emotion, but still accept the emotion? What type of wisdom can one inject, Bhante? Thank you. That's the end of the question.
Yeah, actually, we are not trying to suppress the emotion. Actually, when we know there is an anger available in the mind, so it's a kind of an acceptance. So we recognize, okay, there is the presence of emotion, presence of anger right now. It's a complete radical acceptance. So we fully accept, okay, now this is the situation. So that very understanding does not delude you further. Now, typically what happens is when anger is there, you don't even notice it. And you, automatically it is more and more growing. You are supporting it. You add more and more nimitta, more and more signs from the past, from the future. Now it is growing to the overwhelming level. Ultimately, you get into the argument, you get into quarrels. So that is what is happening. But the moment that you know, okay, this is anger. So this is anger. So this is where you come to a understanding, oh, this is not my anger, this is not him, this is not I, but this is anger. You are looking at it objectively, looking at it mindfully. So that is a significant step actually in the practice. So that is why Buddha mentioned in the what you call in the Dhamma, there is a quality present moment Dhamma. That's an interesting Pali term. Sandittika. So Sandittika means here and now. So here and now you reflect about the mind and you notice, okay, there is anger available. So that is a wise reflection. At that very moment, you know anger as anger, objectively. Then you are not promoting it. Now you take an action, okay, I am not promoting it. This is anger. I better allow it to pass away. The moment you stop promoting that, fertilizing that, then it will slowly fade away. I think I answered the question. I don't know whether I covered the whole question.
Yes, I know. So if the person who put the question has any more clarification needed, they can submit another question, I think, next time. Because we've gone a little bit over time. So, Bhante, is it okay for you to do the guided or we can put a recording?
I think if you can put a recording, I think it is much better. Yeah.
Okay, Sanai.
Okay.
Therwan
okay.
Sanai.
Yeah. Therwan Sanai for the participation, and we'll see you next time. Therwan Sanai.
Therwan Sanai.